This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. Congratulations, we've made it halfway through this Friday the 13th so far. To begin the program today, a new instructional video produced in Marshallese is designed to introduce the culture and laws of the United States to newly arrived Marshallese immigrants in Arkansas. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich attended the premiere this week, and she has this story.
The Office of Diversity and Inclusion of the Jones Center in Springdale hosted a lunch this week for a crowd of 50 Marshall Islanders, officials, and social agency advocates to introduce the new instructional DVD.
The title of the film is "When We Meet Again, Kagayan Ko Ragayan."
Can you say that one more time?
When We Meet Again, Kagayan Ko Ragayan.
And what does that mean?
It means new culture, new law.
That's Albius Latio, Community Outreach Coordinator for the Jones Center. He's Marshallese. He moved to Springdale when he was in third grade, among the first wave of Islanders who came here in the 1980s to find work in the poultry processing industry.
It was really typical because we did not know anything about Springdale, Arkansas. All we know that it was a great place to raise the family and also get a better education and get a work at the same time.
Albius also serves as Marshallese liaison for the Springdale School District, now helping other Islander children to settle in. But even for grown-ups moving from the impoverished Republic of the Marshall Islands, 6,000 miles to northwest Arkansas, can be disorienting, especially because Pacific Islanders tend to live in consanguineous or joint family households.
In our island, we live together as extended family, but it's really hard to live with extended family here because we have to go by the law.
Springdale City Ordinance forbids multiple families dwelling in single-family homes. That's just one of many new laws Islanders must reckon with when they move here. An estimated 6,000 Islander migrants have settled in northwest Arkansas. Hundreds more are coming each year to find work, educate their kids, and get medical help. Because of a special relationship with the U.S. government under a compact of free association, Marshallese can travel to and stay in the United States for as long as they wish on just a passport. But there is a compliance paper trail they must follow. The DVD instructs Islanders on I-94 and Social Security documents, getting a driver's license, how to rent or lease homes and apartments, medical care, utility services, law enforcement, and public school enrollment. A companion booklet also connects Islanders to Carmen Chongam, Consul General for the Republic of the Marshall Islands Consulate, which opened in Springdale this past year. She narrates the DVD in Marshallese with English subtitles.
I'm glad that the booklet came out, and the booklet and the DVD are a good pair. You know, the DVD for people to hear and see, and the booklet for people to read. And also to, you know, take wherever they go. And it's handy because they can put in their purse or bags and go around with it. And so, you know, it's good that the consulate's contact information, it's in the booklet.
Carmen says Marshallese remains the dominant language, especially for adults. And it's really beautiful and really complex.
You know, just like our children trying to get used to some of your sounds like SH and CH and those that we do not have in our alphabet, or same with us, or same with Americans trying to say it correctly, the NG sound. In our alphabet is the N with the line over it. You know, it's hard for them to make that sound, so vice versa.
Catherine Burkhead helped coordinate DVD production. She's director of the Office of Diversity and Inclusion of the Jones Center and is deeply involved with Marshallese assimilation.
We've been working on this project for several years, and it really grew out of a similar project that we did in Spanish several years ago. We called it New Culture, New Laws, and it was to help the Latinos who were new arrivals here understand about driving and the laws. But when we started this project, we really Carmen was with us at that time. Carmen Chongum was our community outreach coordinator. And she really wanted to go beyond what we had done in Spanish when we were reaching the Marshallese community, because she recognized some other kinds of issues that the Marshallese have to encounter. So we've broadened quite a bit from what we did in the Spanish language video to this one that we've produced now in Marshallese.
Now the task, she says, is getting this critical information distributed to islanders.
Actually, we will be uploading this on YouTube by segments so that it can be available everywhere. We're not copyrighting the disc, so anybody who has the disc today is invited to make copies of it to distribute with friends. The DVD that we've made won't do any good if it just sits on a shelf somewhere, so we want to make sure that it gets out into the community. People can contact Albius, contact me here at the Jones Center, contact Carmen at the consulate, and also Mary Bridgeforth in the ESL office at Springdale Schools is going to be distributing the video through the ESL office when parents bring their children in for registration.
The companion booklet is already online. It's titled Living in Arkansas, What You Need to Know as a Marshallese. Grace Donahoe, facilitator of Gaps in Service to Marshallese Task Force, the Jones Center, coordinated its publication along with a committee of Marshallese residents. The book was funded by the Arkansas Minority Health Commission. The cover shows a Marshallese man on a bluff overlooking a vivid blue Arkansas lake, shades of his beautiful aquamarine Pacific archipelago. Reporting for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
For more information, you can visit the Minority Health section on healthyarkansas.gov or call the Jones Center Office of Diversity and Inclusion. That number, 756-8090. Montana has been a teacher, a truck driver, and a computer animator. She lives in Madison County, and she writes poetry. And she wants you to take more of an interest in what you eat. Her book, Worship Your Food, avoids finger wagging, but is heavy on statistics about why your lunch today may not be helping you feel any better. The book is as much about empowerment as anything else. She writes about calories, pesticides, advertising, and flavor. When Quinn Montana came to our studio, I asked her when she first started thinking seriously about what she ate.
Well, I probably got started 30 years ago, if I think about it, with joining a co-op when I was in college. And I was introduced, I've always enjoyed experimenting with different kinds of foods and finding out about different kinds of foods. And so I was introduced to miso and to health foods of the day, tamari and things like that, or hummus and what have you, through that co-op. And I don't know that everything at that time was organic necessarily. It wasn't a word that was kind of on the lips of everybody in those days, but just health food, just healthy eating. And so although not all of my lifestyle was all that healthy in those days, my college years, I kind of evolved from that beginning that long ago and got into gardening later on and then really wanted to raise my own. I've never used pesticides or anything like that. Really wanted to raise my own food in a healthy way, and so became more, and studied herbalism actually as well, and learned about how much of what is out there had been used traditionally for centuries to heal ourselves, and that a lot of medications are coming from plant matter, and I say leave out the middleman, you know? So it kind of came from that, a kind of long evolution of finding out and then following through.
And you developed your own 90-10 rule?
Well, I call it the 90-10 rule because, to my mind, I found that you really, it's very difficult for most people to completely live on a diet that is organic. And that is what I'm espousing for the most part. There are lots of different diets out there. I'm not saying this is what you should eat or this is what you shouldn't eat, except for the fact that what you eat, if you could eat the same things that you normally eat but keep it organic, then you will be that much healthier. However, you're not going to convince everybody tomorrow. And so you end up going to a potluck or going to your mother-in-law's or, you know, visiting with relatives or somebody that is just not on board. And you have to leave yourself room for that. I think that, you know, you can talk about your preferences and why while at the same time participating with it. I'm not going to go to somebody's wedding and say, ew, I'm not going to eat that, you know. I want to be civilized about it, but I also want to encourage other people to make the rest of your foundation diet 90% organic, then you can feel okay to have a little bit of leeway.
Someone hears this and say, well, that's great. You live on some acreage in Madison County. I live in an apartment. I'm working 50 hours a week. I don't have the time.
All right. I hear that a lot, and I do raise some of my own food, but, I've had a variety of jobs, and I talk about that because a lot of this movement is perceived of as a wealthy person's movement, and that is really does not have to be the case. So, you know, there's gewgaws and things that you can buy. You can pay for the fancy shopping bags, and you can get a plastic, which seems a little odd, but composter. But you don't have to. You can do all these things without any frills. And diet is very much part of that. You can, and I have, and I talk about that, live on really quality meals, exciting meals, colorful meals, that if with a little bit of preparation and planning and forethought each week, it does not have to be an overwhelming task, and you can make your own food and bring your own lunches, and you actually save money. And I know that there's this time, you know, people talk about, well, having kids and having that, and that it is, it's overwhelming, but have the kids participate. I mean, this is how people ate for centuries, and yes, our lives are stressed and full of jobs and all kinds of other demands, but it's really not doable. It's really, it's something that once you have decided that this is that important to you, you make the time.
You write that a cheeseburger, if I had eaten a cheeseburger in 1990, it probably had about 330 calories. And if I eat a cheeseburger, an average cheeseburger now, it's about 550.
We are a society that is based on consumerism, and they want us to consume more. And they, by they, I mean the corporate entities who are in charge of the mega agricultural monolith that's out there guiding what we do in a very developed, studied psychological way. And yes, the size of our portions has grown exponentially. Our plate sizes are bigger. If you get a turkey sandwich, as I talk about, the turkey sandwich was, I don't remember the statistics right now, but a small couple of ounces, and now it's twice as big. The sodas, again, the sodas are twice as big. Fries, every part of the meal, you're getting more. And we've come to believe that we want more because we're told that, and that in Japan, they have a saying. I don't remember the saying right now. I certainly couldn't have done it in Japanese anyway. But and what it says is stop eating when you're 80% full, essentially. And we don't do that. In many cultures, it was considered gauche or rude to become a glutton. And that's something that we've lost sight of. In our culture, we compete to eat. We eat as much as we can. We eat until we're completely full. And then sometimes we feel ill, and they say, don't worry, there's a pill for that. And they have us believing that it's perfectly okay to eat a whole pizza and then take a pill when you feel ill later. And it's that all works because they want us to eat more and more and more. And I don't think that anyone is on our side as far as looking out for us. We have to look out for ourselves. That's one of the messages that I want to convey.
Where to seek out recipes? Say, okay, I'm going to start going with the things I find at the co-op, or I'm going to go with the things I grow. But a lot of times I don't know what to do with them so they don't taste the same day after day.
Well, I'm just getting my blog together, but I'm hoping that I will have that kind of thing on an ongoing basis. I started on Facebook.com, worshipyourfood, and I have started putting various recipes on there. People would often ask me, what do you eat? And it makes me laugh because it's just what everyone else eats, only the organic version. But I sometimes do enjoy putting different vegetables together or different types of foods together. And so that will give you a way to enjoy new foods, perhaps. But you can enjoy the same foods that you are accustomed to, just without toxins.
Where can people find the book? They can email you, for one thing.
They can email me to find the book. It's available now at Amazon.com. It's available at Lulu.com, Lulu.com. That's a little better for me. And it's available also at BarnesandNoble.com. And here locally, it's available at Ozark Natural Foods and Nightbird Books and Collier Drugs.
Quinn, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Kyle.
Quinn Montana is author of the book Worship Your Food. She lives in Madison County. You can hear more from our conversation at OzarksAtLarge.com and learn more about the book at WorshipYourFood.com and at the Worship Your Food Facebook page. This is Ozarks at Large. It is Friday, August 13th, 2010. This is Ozarks at Large. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Becca Bacon-Martin. She's the editor of What's Up, the entertainment tabloid found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers.
And if you didn't catch what Kyle just said, it is Friday, August 13th. Now, we're 12 hours into it, and so far nothing bad has happened. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't take precautions.
Okay.
So I've done some research about some Ozark superstitions, folklore, good advice. Here are some of them. Don't travel today.
Okay.
Don't start a job today you can't finish before sundown.
That's just code for being lazy right there. I like that.
And you have a problem with that?
I do not.
Okay, you're never lazy, but a bed changed on Friday will bring bad dreams.
Okay.
Don't sit down to dinner with 12 of your closest friends tonight because superstition says that if 13 people dine together, one will die within the year.
Ooh. Those are the kinds of superstitions I don't like because if it said, you know, someone will die before midnight, then you can just laugh that one off.
But
I don't like
year,
those. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, okay, for good luck, carry a buckeye in your pocket. Put the open end of the pillowcase off the side of the bed to bring pleasant dreams.
I do that every night anyway.
Never move a broom from one house to another.
I don't
because
even know
your
what
problems
that means.
Will go with it.
I
if
see.
You move, don't move your broom.
I see.
Don't run out of salt.
Okay.
It foretells a full year of poverty. It's bad luck to cut cornbread with a knife. You should tear it.
That's, yeah.
If you dream something good, tell it before breakfast and it will come true.
Okay.
If you put on a garment wrong side out, think of a wish as you turn it, and your wish will come true.
But that's got to be on accident, right? You can't...
No, you can't turn it wrong side out so you can wish. And if you see a penny, pick it up. I have a friend who does that constantly, and we leave New Orleans with about 20 bucks in pennies, so...
Yeah, I was going to say, that's not a superstition. That's just, you know, that's a penny more than you had when the day started.
And if you've seen the front of What's Up today, it's a picture of a bottle tree.
Mm-hmm.
Bottle trees came to the Ozarks with slavery in South Arkansas. And there's two sets of superstitions. Bottle trees are supposed to catch evil spirits before they can get in the house. Now, apparently evil spirits only come at night because they burn up in the bottles in the daytime.
I see.
Or you can cork the bottle and set it afloat. I don't know what happens if somebody finds it and opens it. And of course, they're particularly fond of blue, or it could just be that everybody had milk of magnesia bottles.
But the bottle tree was supposed to ward away bad things.
So run out and do something. Or if you're not afraid to leave the house this weekend, here's a short list of other things you can do.
Excellent.
Tonight, Folkways reception at Ozark Folkways for artist Sharon Hayes.
That's near Winslow.
Civil War Living History tonight at the Lyric Theater in Harrison. Douglas Kidd will portray Union Captain William Hunter and talk about battlefield medicine. That starts at 7:30 and tickets are $10. Gary Allen's playing the Arkansas Music Pavilion in Fayetteville tonight. Mm-hmm. Showtime is 7 o'clock and tickets start at $20. Tonight's the last night of the KUAF Summer Jazz Series.
It's over after this.
The Frank, help me with pronunciation, Vignola,
right.
Hot Club Trio at 7:30 at the Stella Boyle Smith Concert Hall at the University of Arkansas. Tickets are $15. Hamlet tonight at 7:30 at the Breedlove Auditorium at the University of Arkansas in Fort Smith. Tickets are $10. And South Pacific at 8 tonight at Rogers Little Theater at the Victory Theater in Rogers. Tickets start at $9.50.
You have so many choices for tonight.
Tomorrow's Gravit Day.
Yes, it is.
Starting with pancakes at 7 o'clock and all sorts of activities in Kindley Memorial Park. Do you know who that's named for?
Yes, he was a veteran who died in action.
World War One.
World War
Flying
One.
Ace.
And if you
Field
read,
Kindley.
If you read the accounts of when his body came back and the entire town of Gravit turned out and put up flags, and it's quite an interesting story.
It's one of those you should know who that is.
Right.
Tomorrow at 2, herbalist Stephen Foster on Ozark Herbs and Medicinal Plants at Hobbs State Park near Rogers. Tomorrow night is the Saturday Gallery Stroll in Eureka Springs, and they will be accepting donations to support the Good Shepherd Humane Society. And tomorrow night is also a night viewing of astronomy at Hobbs State Park.
Now, you know, a couple nights ago was the peak for this latest meteor shower.
Mm-hmm.
Did you get up at 2?
No,
I didn't
was it
either.
Beautiful?
I didn't get up. Yeah.
We assume it was.
Yes.
And Sunday, 4 o'clock at George's, a tribute to Wendy Austin.
Of the Hot House Tomato Boys, or the Blue Footballs.
Great musician who was way not old enough to pass
right.
away. And Steve Pryor will be playing Earl and Them, the Traveling Wheel Bearings. And at 9 o'clock Sunday night, veterans of Zorro and the Hot House Tomato Boys will be playing. And admission is free with donations accepted to help pay medical costs. And the free movies are back in Eureka Springs.
Yes.
Movies in the Park. They've moved to the Basin Spring Park. They start at 8:30 on Sunday nights. And Sunday night is Pee-wee's Big Adventure. Hey, it's free. And two more musical notes. Amy Grant.
Yes.
Supposed to be here tonight.
But?
She won't be.
Oh, okay.
It's a benefit for the Salvation Army, and they simply decided, her promoter simply decided it was too hot to play at Arvest Ballpark.
It's pretty
hard to argue.
Hot, yeah.
So she will be in town October 7th, and the show has been moved to the Walton Arts Center.
Okay.
Tickets go on sale Wednesday at 9 a.m., and they will be $25 to $125. And also coming to the Walton Arts Center, in association with George's Majestic Lounge, Grammy-winning jazz saxophonist Kenny G. September 19th, tickets are already on sale, and they start at $58.
And the Amy Grant tickets can be are through Walton Arts Center now,
yes,
right?
Okay. But they are not available till Wednesday.
Gotcha. Kenny G now?
Kenny G now.
Gotcha.
And I'm done now.
All right. Well, be careful the rest of the day.
You too.
I have a broom that I'd like to give you. Would you like one?
No, thanks.
Okay.
Becca, I already have my car.
Becca Martin is the editor of What's Up, found in Northwest Arkansas newspapers each Friday.
The master of suspense, Sir Alfred Hitchcock, was born on this date in 1899. Hitchcock was an English filmmaker and producer who pioneered several techniques in the suspense and psychological thriller genres. After a successful career in the United Kingdom in both silent films and early talkies, Hitchcock moved to Hollywood. In 1956, he became an American citizen while retaining his British citizenship. During a career spanning more than 5 decades, Hitchcock created a distinctive and recognizable directorial style. Viewers are made to identify with the camera, which moves in a way meant to mimic a person's gaze, and which forces viewers to engage in a form of voyeurism. He framed shots to manipulate the feelings of the audience and maximize anxiety, fear, or empathy, and used innovative film editing to demonstrate the point of view of the characters. Many of Hitchcock's films have twist endings and thrilling plots featuring depictions of murder and crime, although many of the mysteries function as decoys or MacGuffins, meant only to serve thematic elements in the film and the extremely complex psychological examinations of the characters. Hitchcock's films also borrow many themes from psychoanalysis. Through his cameo appearances in his own films, interviews, trailers, and the television program Alfred Hitchcock Presents, the director became an iconic cultural figure. Hitchcock directed more than 50 feature films, and Movie Maker magazine has hailed him as the most influential filmmaker of all time.
Truly I can say I was glad when they said unto me, let us go into the house of the Lord.
Rex Humbard, a traveling evangelist who became a well-known gospel singer, pastor, and pioneer in Christian television, was born in Little Rock on this day in 1919. Humbard was inspired to become an evangelist after seeing a Ringling Brothers and Barnum & Bailey circus tent filled with crowds in Hot Springs, although he refused to attend such a, quote, worldly diversion himself. By the 1970s, a large network of between 1,500 to 1,600 stations worldwide in 91 languages carried his Sunday morning services. One of Humbard's loyal viewers was Elvis Presley, who regularly watched, quote, his preacher each Sunday morning. Presley's father asked Humbard to officiate at his son's funeral in 1977.
This is the 800-meter freestyle relay, and Michael Phelps, just about 54 minutes from when he touched for Olympic gold in the 200 fly, is back in the pool and on the blocks to lead off the relay.
Just 2 years ago on this date, American Michael Phelps swam into history as the winningest Olympic athlete ever by winning his 10th and 11th career gold medals at the 2008 Summer Olympics in Beijing. By the end of the 2008 Olympics, Phelps had earned a total of 14 career Olympic gold medals, the most of any Olympian. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
This is Ozarks at Large. Candy Lee has a timeless voice. Her soon-to-be-released CD, The Gate, sounds as if it could have been recorded in any of the last several decades. There are jazz influences and tinges of folk in Tin Pan Alley. This is the song Follow Your Bliss from that upcoming CD.
I want to sleep under the shade tree. Don't want to be bothered by anybody. I want to talk to the flowers for hours and hours. And I want to laugh like a child.
Candy Lee will release the new album Thursday, August 26th, with a live show at the Smoke and Barrel in Fayetteville. She'll perform with her band, The Sweets. Bobby Daniel and the Bright and Early Band will open the show. Candy Lee moved to Northwest Arkansas from Florida a few years ago, and her music, she says, has benefited from that move. This week, we invited Candy Lee to come to our studio. She says she comes from a family that loves music and loves playing music.
My grandmother still plays music to this day. She's in something called the Cookie Band with her and her, retirement home buddies. But yeah, my grandmother started it off. My mom has been singing around me since I was really little. And I was kind of just brought up on old musicals, a lot of stuff people haven't really heard of. And yeah, I think it's been a good influence in my life.
So that eclectic mix might have contributed to what is sort of an eclectic sound.
Yeah, I'd say so.
When did you start, when did you make the transition from singing around yourself, as you said it, to actually wanting to have people in front of you watching you while you played?
Well, I guess I've always kind of been in chorus, and I've kind of always written little songs to myself. It's just kind of always been something that I've wanted to do. And then I actually started off doing music with my husband David. We used to have a band called 50 Cent Trade, and that was before I could play guitar, and so I just kind of sang and let him play everything, and he sang too, and it was interesting.
How old were you when you started to learn the guitar?
I've been playing guitar for about 3 years now, so not too long.
Does knowing how to play the guitar help with songwriting?
Oh, most definitely. Yeah, I would say a lot of the songs that I write actually start off with chord progressions that I'll come across while practicing, and yeah, it definitely helps a lot. Gives me a lot more direction and more focus than I used to have when I would just jot down words on paper, you know.
If you put the guitar in your hand and you start strumming and you start playing around, does one thing lead to another sometimes?
A lot of times, yeah. Just kind of, I don't
like
know.
Doodling?
The music writes itself most of the time. I'll doodle around, and sometimes I'll get like, I kind of write my lyrics as I go along. I write like the melodies as I find the chords. And so sometimes I'll just find like a set of lyrics that sound really catchy, and I'll stick with that, and then I'll kind of like write everything else around that. So it's kind of different in different songs, whether it starts with lyrics or guitar or, you know, something I just thought up in the shower or whatever.
Is that, do you write? I mean, when you're just working or driving? Or?
Yeah. One of my songs, actually the first song on the album, is called Blue Skies, and I wrote that kind of to windshield wipers. As I was in the car one day, I was like, oh, man, stuck in traffic. Windshield wipers are going. I'm going to write a song. So there's a little windshield wipers on that first track.
Actual windshield wipers?
Mm-hmm.
There is a cloud above my head, above my head. It is not white, orange, or red. These blacks and grays, they...
Let me ask you about Spider Song, too. Mm-hmm. That's the first song I heard. And I think it's a song that bears listening more than once, because the first time you hear it, it's catchy and it's fun, and then you listen to it, there's a lot more going on lyrically there than...
There is. There's actually a story behind this song. When I lived in Florida, before I came here, I worked in the restaurant business, and I still do, but we had a rat problem,
And this is at the restaurant in Florida, not the one you
work
at here.
Right, not the one that I work at here. And but yeah, we had a rat problem, and they made a little nest in the glass dish rack, and I kind of saw them killed, and it just shook me. And I've kind of always been kind of an animal lover, animal activist. I'm a vegan, and and so it really shook me, and I ended up crying in front of all my my coworkers. And so they kind of made fun of me for it for a couple of days. And it just really hurt my feelings that that we've just become so displaced that non-human life just doesn't mean anything anymore. My boss said, you know, oh, wrong place, wrong time for the rat. And I just thought that was just really unfortunate. And so that really shook me, and so I started writing the Spider Song, kind of keeping that in mind. And it's got a lot of levels to the song. It has the little, you know, animal rights activist thing, but then it has also a just a kind of a prejudice issue as well, because there's the deal with not valuing non-human life, but then there's also making fun of that person who actually does value it. And so there's that. And then at the end of the song, it goes into this little part where the girl has the dream. And I actually did have a dream the night after the rat incident. And where I'm from, there's a lot of hurricanes. And so I had this dream that there was this hurricane, and there's the shelter up on the top of this hill. And all the people are running to the shelter, and there's all these animals just kind of running about, not really knowing what to do, chaos. And so I'm trying to scoop up as many as I can and take them to the shelter, and I'm like calling people to help me, and nobody wants to help me. And so then I woke up, and I decided that I need to write a song.
Your guitar case is here.
I do.
I trust your guitar is inside of it.
It is.
Would you mind playing something?
I surely will do that.
All right.
Well, I guess since we've talked about the Spider Song, I might as well play that one. Climbs down the wall. I know I love him most of all. Of all the people in this room, where he ended up, how he got here, he doesn't know. He kinda just goes with the flow of food and shelter. So it goes, are the only things he needs. And I hope nobody finds him there, minding his own affairs. Cause he's got fangs, 8 eyes and legs, drinks blood and spins webs. And we don't do well with those different from ourselves. And we don't give a chance to utter we don't understand. No, we don't. No, we down. The spider in a glass to spare him from the bumbling mass of people who would smash a thing so delicate and sweet. For being in that conquered space, they sanitized and put in place. I had to leave without a trace to set the creature free. But when I got back inside, they must have seen me, cause I could have cried when they laughed at my ass. Save the little spider's life, cause we don't do well with those different from ourselves, and we don't give a chance to either. We don't understand. No, we don't. No, we don't. I tried to hide, but they were colorblind. So I got to keep my head. Then a spider came and carried me away on his web of magic thread. To the moon we fled. And watched all the little ants who were people who just didn't understand.
Oh, that's great. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
It takes a little bit of courage to write a song that personal.
It does.
And then, you know, put it out for people to hear.
Yeah. I think that it's important, though. I kind of think that with being given the microphone, it's kind of your responsibility to put your opinions out there and to try and reach people. I think music and art are one of the most powerful tools that we have as humans to communicate with other people, and so I don't know. It's difficult in one way because you're afraid of being judged, and you're afraid of being shot down in your ideas and everything. But I don't know. It's just something I feel that I need to do.
Tell me about the sweets.
Sweets are great. I started playing with Jennifer Graham first. My friend Steven was having a going away party, and he kind of assembled this little band just for that little party because he really wanted to play to some of my tunes, and he plays trumpet. And so his name is Steven Koger, actually. Hi, Steven. And so he put me and Jennifer together, and we just kind of clicked and hit it off, and we were like, hey, let's do this. Let's do the band. And it turns out she's a really good singer as well. She's a great bass player and a great singer. And so then we just got a drummer. Dan Dean plays the djembe and the snare sometimes. And Emily Jenkins sings backup vocals, and Warren Dietzel, when he can, he's in a lot of other bands as well, but when he can, he plays really great mandolin.
If you look at your list of on your MySpace page or your Facebook page, mm-hmm. people you like to listen to, it's mm-hmm. a wide variety. I'm wondering, yeah. you know, if it's someone like the Flaming Lips, mm-hmm. who no one will mistake you for Wayne Coyne, or vice versa, but can listening to someone like the Flaming Lips help you write or inspire you?
Yeah, I think I feel inspired by everybody that I really listen to a lot. And it's kind of evident, like, who I'm listening to at the time when I'm writing what song. I listened to a lot of Devendra Banhart for a long time, and he does that real, like, folksy, kind of almost gypsy kind of music. And that's when I wrote the Spider song and Sweet Music and the real, like, swanky kind of, like, old-timey kind of tunes. And then there's, like, the Fiona Apple influence, the jazz and all that. So, yeah, it definitely... I can see even now my style has changed depending on who I listen to. Yeah, for sure.
Do you ever go through a Billie Holiday phase?
Billie Holiday. I've never, like, really, really gotten into her, but there was a time when I listened to some Billie Holiday, and I love her voice and the way that that she sings things with just so much passion and so much soul. And I try to emulate that a little bit, I think.
I think there is some of that. Do you mind playing one more song?
Yeah, sure. She walked out of the garden. She felt afraid. She felt desire. But first, she felt she was alone. She was disconnected from the source from which her life flowed. Illusions of duality create separate forms. She walked down to the river where she looked in, saw her own reflection, and then she fell in love. She was disconnected from the source from which her life flows. Ah, ooh. Illusions of duality create separate forms. Me and you, right and wrong, man and nature. She walked down to the valley to pick some flowers for her watery love. And when the darkness of night fell upon the earth, well, she heard mystical howls. And the wolves, they came and chased her away. She ran far from the scene, in circles, so it seemed, out of sight and out of mind. And when she came to raise her head, she looked up at the gate. The gate to the garden, impenetrable as it was. She knew the secret. She shed her skin and she walked back in. Oh, as without a self. When she was back in the garden, she was no longer afraid. She felt no more desire. She was one with everything. When she was back in the garden, she was no longer afraid. She felt no more desire. She was one with everything.
The Gate comes out the 26th.
Yes.
The show that night starts at 8.
It does.
Is that correct? Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you very much for coming.
Thank you so much for having me.
Candy Lee's new CD, The Gate, will be released on August 26th. That's a Thursday night. There will be a live show at the Smoke and Barrel in Fayetteville. There's more from her visit to our studio online at OzarksAtLarge.com. And that's just about all the time we have for this Friday the 13th edition of Ozarks at Large. The 12th season of the KUAF Summer Jazz Series, presented by the North Arkansas Jazz Society and Walton Arts Center, will come to a close this evening with New York-based guitarist Frank Vignola and his trio. Frank recently performed with Mark O'Connor's Hot Swing Band and has worked with Ringo Starr, Leon Redbone, and others. Tonight's final performance in this summer series begins at 7:30 in the Stella Boyle Smith Fine Arts Center on the University of Arkansas campus. Tickets available at the door. More information available at KUAF.com. Ozarks at Large is supported by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies at the University of Arkansas in Fayetteville, dedicated to the celebration and documentation of the region's history and culture. KUAF would like to highlight the efforts of the Bella Vista Recycling Center, a community service project of AARP Chapter 109 of Bella Vista. Proceeds from the Recycling Center are used to help out various organizations, including KUAF Public Radio. For more information, bellavistarecycles.com. This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Rogers, Sonora, a listener-supported service of the Department of Journalism and Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. I'm Kyle Kellums. Thanks for listening. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm back Sunday morning with Weekend Ozarks at Large.